I'm Reverend Lisa Day, minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Welcome to our weekly radio program, where you'll hear a segment from one of our recent services recorded at our church on beautiful Troop Square. We invite you to join us Sundays at 11 a.m. in person or via live stream on Zoom. You can find the Zoom link and more about Unitarian Universalism in Savannah at our website, uusavannah.org. We hope you enjoy today's program.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello to my powerful, patient, pollen-covered pals. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. My name is Jessica Levitt-Watara. Our minister, Reverend Lisa Day, is out, and so Jessica Swanson and I will be making service together. You got the Jessicas in charge, which may be scarier than you know. Our powers exponentially increase when we're together. Yeah. Our worship, religious education, and covenant group theme for March is paying attention. Here at the UU Church of Savannah, we are working to build a diverse, multicultural, and beloved community. We celebrate the presence and participation of people of all races, genders, sexual orientations, abilities, and ethnic and national origins. We warmly welcome you on YouTube or here on site, whoever you know yourself to be, and wherever you are on your journey. With the lighting of our chalice, symbol of our Unitarian Universalist faith, we enter to sacred time. In the Unitarian Universalist tradition, our chalice stands for the light of reason, the warmth of community, and the flame of hope. Today I share the following words. Attention is the most basic form of love. In this space, we acknowledge the mystery that by observing the world, we change the world. May this light clarify our vision and warm the reality we build together.
Good morning. For a moment, look around you. Notice the light filtering through the colors in our windows, the smooth paint, the bricks on the walls. The wood under your feet that is supported by heavy beams. Feel the coolness of your inhale and the warmth of an exhale. Feel your body resting on the pew. Touch the pages of your program. Now, think of all the hands that went into creating and maintaining this space for us today. From the binding of the books to the manufacturing of an air conditioner. How many hands carved the benches we sit on? How many people paved the roads we took to travel here? Come, let us pay attention together.
So today, for our Love at the Center moment, I reached out to Kathy Mayeen, who some of you know and remember, and she sent me something to share with you all here in the sanctuary, and I believe she's on YouTube. So, hi, Kathy. When I thought of Love at the Center, I immediately was reminded of our church community. I have been blessed to have experienced much love in my life and in this place. Coretta Scott King said, "The greatness of a community is most accurately measured by the compassionate actions of its members." We have an abundance of compassion here at UU Savannah. True love at the center through good times and challenges. I've been a member since 1993. I continue to be inspired by our welcoming and loving community, long-term and new members alike. The love is also found outside of here. For example, Lisa on the Loose meetups are a great way to spend time with Lisa and others in a small group setting. It is one of my favorite things to do. I have been attending services online for a while now. I'm excited about coming back soon. See you then.
It's time for our readings. Our first reading today is A List of Some Observation by Joseph Brodsky. A list of some observation. In a corner, it's warm. A glance leaves an imprint on anything it's dwelt on. Water is glass's most public form. Man is more frightening than its skeleton. A nowhere winter evening with wine. A black porch resists an osier stiff assaults. Fixed on an elbow, the body bulks like a glacier's debris, a moraine of sorts. A millennium hence, they'll no doubt expose a fossil bivalve propped behind this gauze cloth with the print of lips under the print of fringe, mumbling good night to a window hinge. Our second reading is Hallowed Ground and Hard Stone by Reverend Lisa Day. I remove my shoes because this is hallowed ground, the guide says. A holy place, not an everyday life place. The guide tells us how we know, or think we know, it is the one and not the other for those people millennia ago. But aren't the places where we live holy ground? Don't our very acts of feeding one another, healing one another, singing to one another, teaching one another, dancing together, and weeping together hallow the places where we live? This is an early morning image, the guide says, spritzing it with water so we can see it on a cloudy afternoon. Shifting light through the hours and the seasons reveals different images. Isn't that the way it is with the images of our lives? That the signs and symbols, events and turning points and decisions, telling the stories of our days and years, come into clarity and fade again through cycles of light and dark, seasons of birth and growth, hibernation and death. This stone is hard, the guide says, harder even than granite, so hard that the snows and rains and winds of thousands of years have not erased marks left by the glaciers of the last ice age. Yet the buffalo wore one tall rock smooth, rubbing away their irritations against it till it shone like glass. Isn't even this the way of our lives, that flesh and blood can find relief in rough places, that irritants can polish us, that hard will sometimes yield to soft after countless repeated encounters?
Jess and I are going to take turns with the message today. The umbrella in which we planned our remarks or our reflections was, what gets your attention becomes your intention. We often think of observing as a passive act, like a security camera recording an empty hallway. We assume that the world is out there, and we are simply taking pictures of it with our eyes. But both modern science and ancient wisdom suggests something more radical. The observer and the observed are a single system. In quantum physics, the observer effect reveals that the mere act of watching a particle changes its behavior. It's as if the universe is the ultimate collaborator. It refuses to be just one thing until we look at it. If the atoms change when they are seen, how much more do the people, the trees, and the communities around us change under the weight of our attention? The art critic John Berger famously wrote in his book, Ways of Seeing, "The way we see things is affected by what we know or what we believe." Berger argued that we never just see a landscape or a face in a vacuum. We see it through a filter of our history, our bias, and our expectations. When we see a sunset, we aren't just seeing light hit the atmosphere. We are seeing every poem we've ever read about endings, every memory of a beach trip, every fear of the coming dark. Our attention is not neutral. It is the spotlight that colors everything it touches. Research in neuroaesthetics and psychology suggests that when we move past a glance, which usually only lasts 8 to 30 seconds, and spend several minutes with a subject, our brain shifts from simple categorization to emotional immersion. Studies around what is called slow looking show that this act of sustained observation actually builds empathy. A recent study conducted at the Penn Museum found that participants who engaged in sustained observation of objects reported significantly higher levels of compassion. We see this idea clearly in how we engage with art, specifically film. When we sit in a dark theater, we are professional observers. For 2 hours, sometimes longer, we look through the eyes of someone who is nothing like us. Perhaps someone from a different country, a different century, or a different life path. By watching a character struggle, our brains begin to mirror their emotions. We are observing a fiction, yet we emerge from the theater changed. We walk out into the street and we see the delivery driver or the tired parent not as obstacles, but as the protagonists of their own complex movies. Our observation has turned a stranger into a human. Even our biology tells a story of how we focus. In the animal kingdom, there is a general rule for eye placement. Eyes on the side, born to hide. Eyes in the front, born to hunt. Zebras and rabbits have eyes on the sides of their heads to provide a panoramic view, scanning the horizon for danger. They are observers of breadth. Humans, like owls and lions, have forward-facing eyes. This gives us binocular vision, the ability to perceive depth and focus intensely on a single point. Evolutionarily, we are designed to lock in. But in a spiritual context, this predatory focus can be transformed. Instead of focusing to capture, we can focus to connect. Our biology gives us the unique ability to look someone directly in the eye, to meet gaze with gaze. This forward-facing vision allows for the I-thou relationship, a concept introduced by the Jewish philosopher Martin Buber. We stop scanning the world for what we can get from it, and we start seeing the possibilities that are right in front of us. Thich Nhat Hanh, one of my favorite spiritual teachers, taught that mindfulness is the energy that helps us be present. He spoke often of deep seeing. He would say that when you look at a piece of paper, if you are truly paying attention, you will see the cloud that provided the rain for the tree, the logger who cut the tree, and the bread that that logger ate. The intention is to be more connected to all that we encounter. Since observing changes the world, we have a massive responsibility. If we observe our partners with boredom, they become boring. If we observe our neighbors with suspicion, they become suspicious. If we pay attention and see with the beginner's mind, seeing the world as if for the very first time, our intentions shift, and we give the world permission to be new, to be vibrant, and to be divine. Today, tomorrow, next week, next year, forever, let us practice paying attention. Let us use our forward-facing eyes not to hunt, but to hold. Let us remember that our gaze is a gift that changes the reality of everyone that it lands upon. Thank you.
Think back over the last week. What have you given your attention to this past week? Not what you meant to, not what you wish you had. What actually got your eyes, your scroll, your worry, your mental real estate? For some of us, if we're honest, the answer is at least a little bit uncomfortable. The news cycle, social media, doom scrolling at midnight, the outrage of the day, the algorithm serving us exactly what it knows will keep us hooked. We live in a moment where the world is asking a lot of us. There are things right now that are demanding our attention, genuine crises, real suffering, policy decisions with profound consequences for people locally and globally. We would be failing each other if we looked away entirely. And yet, there's a question underneath that one, not just what gets your attention, but what does your attention do? There's a concept called the attention economy, the idea that in a digital world, human attention has become the most valuable commodity there is. Every app, every platform, every notification is engineered to capture it. Not because the engineers are evil, though the ethics of many may not align with ours, but because attention converts to engagement, engagement converts to data, and data converts to dollars. It is a literal economy, and we are the resource being extracted. So when you click on outrage-based headlines, you fund the production of more outrage-based headlines. When you engage with influencers whose entire identity is built around consumerism, you help drive overconsumption. When you doom scroll through disaster after disaster without a moment to breathe or act, you teach your nervous system that the world is nothing but disaster, and you make yourself less capable of responding to it. This is not a personal failing. This is a designed system working exactly as intended. But here's what I want us to hold today. The economics of attention are not only about money and markets. There are spiritual economics, and we have choices and opportunities to direct our attention in ways that build toward a better future. What you attend to grows. Where you direct your care, your presence, and your passion, that is where life takes root. Think about compound interest. A small amount of money invested consistently and left alone grows into something much larger over time. Attention works the same way. The things we return to again and again, the communities we check in on, the movements we follow and the neighbors that we ask after, those things compound. They become real and they become the world. So a question becomes, what are we compounding? I recently came across a short video by a man named Tim Chisano, who's a very popular social media voice. He's talking about parenting, but I think he's talking about something much larger, and I'd like to read it to you. He said, "Yesterday in the subway, someone approached me about a parenting pep talk, and my immediate thought is that once your kid starts speaking, if you're super lucky, there's a few phrases you're going to hear a lot. And no matter how tired, how stressed, or whatever else is on your mind, if you hear the words, 'Watch me,' 'Look at me,' 'Can we please?' 'Help me,' 'Play with me,' 'Chase me,' or just about any variation of that, just know that it's fleeting. Nobody's perfect at it, and you don't have to be either. But if you never take it for granted, and every time you hear it, you treat it as food for the soul, it is going to kind of break your heart when you realize that time has passed. And I cannot think of a world in which you will ever look back and think, 'I did too much.' Just be all in for as often as you can, just for a minute, Let nothing else in the world matter after you hear them say that, because one day you're not going to hear it anymore. Watch me. There is something holy in that phrase. A child saying, watch me, is not just asking for your eyes. They are asking for your full presence. They are saying, I exist. I am doing something. Will you witness it? And research confirms that what parents already know in their bones, when children receive our undivided attention, especially in those early years, they flourish. They grow more confident, more curious, more capable of connection. Our attention is not passive, it's generative. It creates the conditions for life to expand. So the question isn't just, what are we missing when our attention is elsewhere? It's what's failing to grow. What's in its infancy right now, in this congregation, in this city, in movements that would flourish with more of our collective attention? What seeds are waiting for us to notice them? What's the magic formula, if there is one, for where we place our attention in a world that is both breaking and beautiful? I don't think there's a formula, but I do think there are some practices. The first is simply observing, noticing, not judging, not fixing, just becoming more conscious of where your attention actually goes. You can try it this week. When you reach for your phone, pause for half a second, ask, what am I looking for right now? Connection? Distraction? Information? Comfort? There's no wrong answer, but naming it gives you a little more choice. The second is intentionality about what you feed. Plants grow where they're watered, and children grow where they're seen. Communities strengthen where people show up. The same is true for ideas, for movements, for culture. If you want a world with more beauty, attend to beauty. If you want a world with more justice, attend to the people doing the slow, unglamorous work of building it, not instead of naming what's wrong, alongside it. There's no right answer to what to attend to. This world needs all of us now, bringing our unique gifts to build towards a better future. The third practice is the one I want to linger with, and that's the practice of our collective attention, what we attend to together. One of the most disorienting things about this particular moment is that we are each in our own algorithmic bubble, shown a slightly different version of reality, primed to distrust the version someone else is seeing. That fragmentation is not an accident. It serves the same economy that profits from our outrage and our isolation. But community, the kind we aspire to build here, is a radical act of shared attention. When we gather like this, we are choosing to look at the same things together, to sing the same songs, to sit with the same questions, to hold each other's grief and celebration in view at the same time. This is not escapism. This is resistance. This is a different kind of economy, one where the currency is presence. What if we brought that same intentionality outward? What if we choose as a community to direct our collective attention toward what is being built, not only what is burning? Toward the people who are doing the work in classrooms, in courtrooms, in community gardens, in mutual aid networks, city council meetings, the people showing up week after week because they believe something better is possible. And what if we protected each other's and our own attention the way we try to protect our children's from manipulation, manufactured despair, systems that profit from our disconnection? Because here's the thing about compounding attention. It works in both directions, maybe all directions. Every week we show up here, we make a deposit. Every time we choose to witness each other, we are building something. And it may not feel like much in a single moment, just like a child saying, watch me, may not feel like much in that single moment. But over time, over years, over a life lived in covenant with other people, it compounds into a world. There's an image I'd like to leave you with. A child says, "Watch me." And for a moment, the whole world narrows to that one small human doing something brave or silly or new. And in that moment of full attention, something is confirmed. You are real, you matter, and I see you. That's reason enough to pay attention. But the downstream effect of that tiny interaction over time compounds directly toward life instead of extraction. We get to choose what we are building, and we get to choose every day where we make our deposits. Where you give your attention gets your intention. Amen.
This is Reverend Lisa Day. I hope you've enjoyed this program from the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Please join us at one of our services sometime soon at our church on Troop Square or live on Zoom. We're the beacon of liberal religion in Savannah, and you can find out more at uusavannah.org. We meet on Sundays at 11 a.m. Thanks for listening.